Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you my conversation with Aaron Wren backstage at the County Before Country Conference at East River Church in Ohio, hosted, coordinated, ran by Michael Foster, author of the book, It's Good to Be a Man, pastor of East River Church, and an entrepreneurial-minded guy. It really was a blue-collar conference. We've discussed some of this stuff in previous episodes. But I listened to Aaron's talk and took a little bit of issue with his phrasing. He was saying we kind of lost the institutions and what we're actually doing is waging an insurgency right now. And I went right up to him after the talk and I said, hey, I disagree with calling it an insurgency. Those are the bad guys. Those are the guys that we've been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan to try to expel them and help the local population kind of manifest their own destiny. And we need to be careful about using these terms. And that I think it's actually what we're doing where we are right now as Christians, as those of us that understand the benefit of the old paths, the things that have been woven into creation since the beginning. We're waging a counterinsurgency. We're trying to expel these foreign actors, these people that are coming in perverting our institutions. And so this interview is kind of out of that quick comment I made to him after his speech and said, hey, can you come sit down and have a chat with me about it? And then we kind of move into masculine issues and habit building and some of the things that he does to take advantage of his time and to be productive. So without further ado, my interview with Aaron Wren. Anyway, we're at County Before Country in Ohio, and you gave a talk today, and I think, you know, I wanted to jump into this. Is my understanding is this will be end up being kind of a backstage pass thing to this event and kind of continuing conversations on the topic. I came up to you afterwards. You kind of laid out some high level points and then expounded on them. And I told you I was a soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know, have been involved in counterinsurgency things in Iraq and Afghanistan, seeing kind of third party actors, other states kind of coming in and viewing an opportunity to kind of kill Americans. So a lot of the stuff that I did in the latter parts of my career were targeting these insurgent networks and right. counterinsurgency stuff. So one of the things you were saying was, I think just say what your point was on the, about being an insurgency, or if that was how that was tied into your talk as well, because I don't want to pull it out of context or whatever.
Sure. So, you know, traditionally, I think a lot of conservative Christians have thought about themselves in a culture war context. Mm-hmm. And the idea of a culture war is sort of like you got Democrats on one side of the political battlefield, Republicans on the other. They're sort of fighting it out on election day. Or you've got these, you know, Christian activists over here, secular activists over here, and they're sort of fighting it out. And my hypothesis here is that, you know, essentially the left won, in a sense, the culture war, in that they captured virtually all of the critical institutions that count in our society. You know, the elite media, the universities, the major corporations, the federal bureaucracy. You were in the military, even the military to a great extent.
Absolutely.
I was amazed when I said that I wouldn't want my son to grow up and go in the military. A number of ex-military people here said, that's right on. We don't join it. And, you know, the Supreme Court's conservative, but that's really it. And so I say, you know, this model, when kind of the other side controls all the institutions, you need to think differently. You need to think more like you are the resistance. I use the term insurgency, but you can use the term resistance. Resistance going against the occupying army that's come in and this hostile force. It's like occupying your land. And therefore, you have to think very differently about the world in terms of one, you want to kind of repel the invader, so to speak, but you have to use asymmetric tactics. Mm. You don't want to make the population hate you. You want to win the affections and the loyalty of the people. Things of that nature. And so I talked about, hey, you want to avoid, you know, some of these direct confrontations. You want to think about how to make allies among the civilian populations, things of that nature. And so it's a shift from what I call a cultural war to cultural insurgency. I think you had some great thoughts, which is like, You know, insurgent makes you sound like the bad guy. I love that.
Well, I guess we've heard from
because Afghan because insurgents in our wars are always the bad guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, think about that. I very much got to think about that, and I love that because now I'm going to think the cultural resistance may be a better term or something like that, or the counterinsurgency. But that's a great pickup. One of the reasons that I like this is totally new material. Uh-huh. I get the feedback. It helps me think about how to refine it and talk about things differently.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what we even kind of heard from some guys earlier on is don't create this echo chamber. Come out here and be with some of these guys and you're bumping up against things and you're getting a lot of good feedback. And one of the things that this camp here at County Before Country is a lot of different backgrounds.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily a denominational thing. This is we're in the, on the front lines of the culture war.
Right. So what I like to say is decentralized, kind of different groups doing different things. Whatever Michael Foster's doing, I love what Michael's doing.
Yeah.
I don't need to be coordinating everything I'm doing with what Michael's doing. We can come together and do this conference. It's better to have lots of independent people than to have, you know, big organizations, big leaders sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, in some contexts, you need bigger organizations, but you don't want to have everything tied up in large organizations today. And the other thing I see a lot of times in the conservative world, a lot of people, one of the ways you make a name for yourself is by throwing red meat to your followers and, you know, just slamming the left in these terms. And I'm like, well, that's good. I don't oppose that. But I also want to say you got to challenge your own side, too. And we need to think about, okay, great. If we're so in the right, how come the left wins all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're so much smarter than they are, how come they're winning? Maybe they actually know more than we do in some important ways. It's hard to think that. So I like to give talks like this. To challenge the thinking on the conservative side as well as challenging the thinking kind of on the liberal side as well. I try to be rigorously independent in my thinking and just this is what I see and call them like I see them.
Yeah.
But I also think a lot about how to communicate it. So I think the phraseology is very important. And so I'm going to think about this word like cultural resistance, cultural this, cultural that.
So yeah, I think that one of the things that I felt like is not letting I even when the way that you phrased it back to me made me think about their side of things more too is if we've said for sure that they have become so entrenched because in Iraq it was very clear that these were the culturally they knew these were Iranians maybe from an American perspective we don't know that these guys are foreign guys we don't have the cultural understand the cultural nuances as you know, ground pounding soldiers, they know who these foreign actors are. So maybe the institutions have become so homogenous now that the players, but I guess my thought is to say these institutions are way older than what you are espousing and what you're trying to say and not letting them define it. So before we go into this talk, this is not the size of the octagon we're fighting in here. It's actually, you know, culturally, how far back this goes. And I'm not giving you this institution, but I also felt like you put that intention with understanding where you should kind of fight too. Like maybe talk about that a little bit more and how you're, what battles you're choosing. So maybe expound upon that a little bit more.
Yeah. For me personally, you know, I don't typically go around getting involved in every kerfuffle on the internet for the most part. I do sometimes. But for the most part, I stick to my issues, which are sort of cultural diagnostics for mostly the evangelical church, but others going forward. Things like this idea of shifting from maybe cultural war to cultural insurgency, cultural resistance, the three worlds framework. I'm pretty good at cultural diagnostics. I come from a management consulting background, so applying that, very important. And then, you know, I've also written a lot of men's issues. And so I kind of got into the Christian space through men's issues. This is anachronistic. This isn't the exact truth, but this is just to illustrate. I saw all these young men turning into people like Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan, you know, Andrew Tate, but they're not going to the church. What's going on? And, of course, it wasn't those guys back then. You know, Peterson was sort of a very, very, very small figure back then. But I saw all these online influencers. And the men were turning to them, and they were not going to the church. And part of it is because the church is telling them things that aren't true, unfortunately. Yeah. And not that they got the Bible wrong, but they tell you things like, you know, women are attracted to servant leaders. That's not true, actually. Don't believe that.
Yeah.
That's what they tell you. Jordan Peterson tells you that girls are attracted to boys who win status competitions with other boys.
Yep.
That's much more like what we saw in high school when the girls all wanted to be the captain of the football team.
Yeah. Right,
so,
and my, you know, my own wife, we met in high school, and surprisingly, I don't, you know how much of it was me maturing just as a man and changing from a homeschool nerd into a man. But also there was a little bit more when I became a special operations war veteran. She married me at that point in my life, not the homeschool nerdy phase.
Exactly.
So I think that I've benefited from that. Going to war and coming back, I got the girl after that.
That's right. A guy on my list says, hey, you know, I'm a pilot. And whenever whenever I need to whip out the Trump card, I just tell the women I'm a pilot. If I tell them they want to come for a ride on my plane, I'm in, And so but that's the sort of thing, like, this idea that, like, servant leadership is what women find attractive, it's not in the Bible. It's nowhere in the Bible. So a lot of times these pastors are really acting like life coaches. You know, the Bible doesn't talk about dating. So if they're giving out dating advice, they're no more authoritative than, like, you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to stick to that sort of stuff. I'm not really a theologian. You don't hear me spending a lot of time debating the Bible and theology because that's not my area of expertise. But that's sort of the men's issue. So I've been really focusing on the men's issues, trying to help the church in men's issues, helping men, to be better, better understand the world, help the church better to reach men. That's been another one that I go at. Every time something happens, I don't jump on the bandwagon of the latest Twitter controversy. I ignore most of them, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that, going kind of back to that, the violence aspect and the framework there, one of the couple of the podcasts I've done, I kind of have a multi-part theology of violence, is what I call it. And some of it's meant to kind of be shock and awe, and I'm not a pastor either, so I kind of, even listening to Doug and some people to qualify theology, maybe I shouldn't be using the word theology if I'm not a pastor, but I have prescribed men, and this is why I think that the Joe Rogans and the Jocko Willink type characters,
Jocko's another one.
They are men, and they're in the Terminalist and the Gladiator and the Braveheart categories, and there's not guys that have taken battlefield experience like those guys that are Christians and say, I did this in another life, and I bringing that intensity, but they're missing kind of that foundational piece. All of them are, and so some, a lot of stuff I've talked about, and I see the guys just get amped up. It's like, you need to be extremely dangerous, but the only framework I think that works for cultivating how to apply that capacity for danger and violence is the Christian worldview,
right?
And there's a meekness, and there's these buzz phrases that are thrown around in masculinity, but essentially extremely dangerous. And then read through this, all these different Old Testament, guys. Oh, you want 100 foreskins? I'll give you 200.
Yeah.
And that makes the church, like big church here, big Eva in America, uncomfortable to talk about that stuff, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. A lot of things too, is just guys like Jocko and Peterson, they just give you like basic, actionable, encouraging stuff. I used to use an example of Mark Driscoll. He drew a lot of guys, but he had this sort of drill instructor kind of approach. We're going to be tough. And that's not a lot of these pastors think. Men respond to toughness, but they like to tear people down, but they never build them back up.
Mm.
I mean, Jocko, explains to people, by the way, you say you don't have time to work out. You can get up at 4:30 in the morning and work out.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, people tweet or send him pictures of their watch or their clock at 4:30 in the morning when they're up working out in the morning. And it's like, wait a minute, I can actually do this.
Yes.
I don't personally get up at 4:30 in the morning workout, but I mean, this idea that like, here's something, you can do is like, they actually build you up and they give you practical encouragement, and they, give you a pat on the back when things are going the right way. They don't make excuses, but they're not just beating you up and telling you how you're a loser.
Yeah.
They're telling you how you can become a winner
and
how to make progress. And that's what's missing from the church.
Yeah. And Michael Foster is talking about how much hunger there is.
Right.
They're looking for it wherever they can go. And I think a lot of pastors are squandering a moment in history because they haven't exercised dominion. Like, for me, it's very hard to have a obese pastor. My pastors are in shape, right. You know. I don't know if that's I think it's more genetic than it is their workout regimen. But that cultivating the health and even understanding as a soldier how much my nutrition, how much my sleep went into me being able to execute tactically. Because you think about your visual acuity, your ability to your brain to function and make these decisions in dynamic environments, and that is comes out of actual physical health. That comes out of training. And so I feel like a lot of Christians are lazy. It's very easy to come to this conference and get very excited about this and then go back to your hometown and not eat right and to not have dominion over your home and treat your wife well and to do these things. And we can kind of escape and chase these kind of far off grand goals and not do what the work that's required at home.
Right. I mean, I'll say, you know, I was always extremely smart. And so I never had to work hard in school. And I got straight A's all through high school. And in college, I'm just like, yeah, whatever grade I can get. And by not really going to class and not doing the homework is fine with me. And I was able to just kind of coast through life and I did pretty well. But I'm like, man, I had so much potential that was squandered because I just didn't work hard. And like now, you can always challenge yourself to do more. I feel like I'm more motivated to work harder and put in more hours and be more focused. And like, then I'm doing more than I've ever done at any point in my life in terms of trying to maximize what I'm given.
And what would you say that has effect on your own joy personally and where you are comparing to life before?
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly am much happier. I mean, I was miserable in the past for a variety of reasons. But what I would say is it's easy to do this stuff when you realize I really do believe the work that I'm doing is related to the biggest challenges facing the church today. This is the most important stuff in many ways facing the American church today. And so I want to be engaged on the biggest problems and the most important problems. And when you're doing that, you have the opportunity to do that, which not everybody does. You know, one, it comes with a huge weight of responsibility. You know, when somebody sends me a link to a sermon and like somebody's quoting my work in their sermon, I'm like, this better be good work. It has to be rigorous. But secondly, you know, you really are motivated to actually do stuff because you realize it's important and it's impactful. And so I'm very fortunate because not everybody I've done a lot of inane things in corporate America in my life. And, you know, it's good to not have to do that these days.
Awesome. Well, what maybe ended with, you know, you could tell guys leaving a conference or guys where they are in their life right now, like what you would say as you engage in all these masculinity issues, top one or two things that they need to do right now or changes that you would see that they're not doing. Go to the heart of the matter.
I'll give you two things. Number one, in terms of what you should be doing, I always say the number one thing for the Christian is you've got to be a person of prayer. You can never pray too much. I mean, prayer, your prayer life is the most foundational thing I think we do spiritually. The second thing I'd say is, you know, different people respond to different things. What has always worked for me in trying to make changes in habits and improve is I call it the ratchet technique. It's like start by doing one small thing. And then once you're doing that, add another one. And once you're doing that, add another one. You just cumulatively add small changes until you've built up small changes. So, you know, like all of us, I get out of shape occasionally. You know, I move, you know, when I moved to New York, I moved from New York to here and I got out of the gym and all that. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to start by doing 10 push-ups a day. That's all I'm going to do, 10 push-ups a day.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to increase it to 15, right? Then I'm going to start doing, you know, sit-ups. Then I'm going to start doing, you know, air squats. Then I'm going to start doing, you know, dumbbell curl. I mean, whatever. So you start adding on exercises. I'm going to start running. Add little things. To it. So like now I get up in the morning, I do some push-ups, I do a couple stretches, I read the Bible, you know, I take my, you know, my the potato starch shake and things like that I make. And it's a routine in the morning. But it starts with just doing one thing. Start with one. If you can make one change and then keep going, that's good. And the other thing I say is it helps. The morning routine is a perfect place to apply this because you can integrate it with physical activities that you do every day by brushing your teeth. Imagine if you started by saying, I'm going to say the Lord's Prayer every morning after I finish brushing my teeth. You get that going. Now the brushing your teeth becomes the trigger to just automatically do it. Yeah. So when you integrate it with physical things, it really helps.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for taking the time to discuss this a little bit, and look forward to following along with what you're doing in the future.
Thank you.
You got something next weekend, right?
Yes.
Out west.
I'm speaking in Boise, Idaho, and then I'm speaking out in Battleground, Washington. And then I'm going to Miami. I'm speaking at the NatCon 3 conference. That's, you know, three talks in about 4 days.
So it's going to be a pretty
big travel swing next week.
People are new to kind of what you're doing. Where would you direct them to go? How can they find more about kind of the work you're doing? And what can you do? Where do they go?
Go to my website, sign up for my mailing list, aaronrenn.com, AaronRenn.com. It's based on Substack. Basically, sign up for it.
Yep.
It's free to sign up. There's a lot of great free stuff there, and check it out.
Awesome. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There you have it, folks. A short and sweet interview with Aaron Renn. As he said in the interview, you can find him on Twitter. He's got a little bit of Instagram presence, and writes a email that is available at his website, aaronrenn.com, AaronRenn.com. And that's powered by Substack. Actually just signed up, started poking around there. His newsletter's got a lot of content there, publishes on a pretty regular basis. And also his podcast. You can find links there as well. And check out his work, follow along, and then look for the County Before Country full-length speeches to come as Michael Foster and his crew get through the video. I'd like to also direct you in the show notes to the Hardman podcast link that includes Eric Kahn's talk with John Moody after his talk. And John Moody's talk is actually live as well on YouTube. So we'll link that so you guys can get some of those talks that they're coming out. Those of you that weren't able to be at County Before Country and experience the full power of being in the room with 500-600 blue collar, hardworking Christians and thought leaders to discuss how we build things, how we focus on what's directly in front of us. So yeah, obviously we'll link all that. We'll link the Hardman podcast. We'll link the East River Church YouTube feed that has, I think, at least Delano Squires and John Moody at this point, but we'll also update the show notes to have Aaron Renn's full talk in the show notes as well when that becomes available. And engage with these accounts and start to consume the thought-provoking media that all these guys that are serious about building and growing locally for the betterment of the world. And as always, thanks for listening to Life on Target. And please share this episode with at least one friend. If you're sharing our episodes with one friend that you think would help them as they're building and doing things productively in their life, we're going to continue to experience the organic growth that we have. As always, have a good one.